With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Happy Friday, everyone. We made it.
Yes, we're here. We're alive. And I am still queer because it's never going to change. Happy Friday.
So when someone asks you if you changed in quarantine, you're not going to say
like,
that.
Nope, I have not changed whatsoever, any part of me.
Good, good. Well, what are you up to this weekend, Ryan? Any big plans?
Today's a very special birthday. Today's a very special day. It's my mother's 50th birthday.
Cute.
I know. It's very exciting. It sucks that she was going to be here, but it's okay. Plans changed because COVID. It would actually been her first time being out to Los Angeles since I moved out here.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it would have. But either way, it's fine. I'm just happy.
Didn't she say she's never going to come here now again?
Oh, yeah, she did. She actually did. Once she heard the news that there was a big Navy boat pulling in, like docking in, she was like, oh, no, thank you. I will never be there. But I do think that's going to change once this is all clear, hopefully. And yeah, happy birthday to you, mother. Love you.
By the way, we did have a company-wide meeting today over Zoom. That was a first. And it was very fun and funny.
There was like 200 people there. I mean, it was funny, but it was also funny when you could like scroll through people's camera and just seeing like the jokes weren't landing for a lot of people. And they're just like all like, just not even smiling or anything. Everyone was like, it was hilarious.
And then actually one of them shared a video of a little boy singing and it was so cute. And then I started to jump in the chat and I was wondering if I was a bit inappropriate because I was like, now this is making me want to have children. And then someone was like, yeah, go for it. I said, well, if there's a man out there. And then I was like, maybe this is inappropriate in the company chat.
What was inappropriate was you texting our boss saying that he looked hot AF because he cut his hair off.
It's a compliment.
I know, but you don't tell your boss that he looks hot, even though our boss is gay. It doesn't matter.
All right. Well, Brian, if you thought that was inappropriate, hit me up if you're listening now.
He didn't. Our little insider to our channel crew, Channel Q text message thread, everyone was calling him Zaddy and everything.
Exactly.
Just give us your hard
time. Don't wait. Yeah, you're giving me a hard time, as usual. I'm used to it. But if you want to add something to your plans this weekend, you might want to join Channel Q this weekend, Sunday at 2 p.m. for the Sunday Chill. It's going to be an Instagram live event and happy hour with our friends from Chill Bar in Palm Springs. We love those guys. And Chill Bar's resident drag queen, Sabrina Williams, will be hosting it as our quarantine cocktail toastologist.
Tip your queens and your bartenders, which it might be yourself.
Channel Q's DJ Lisa Pittman, DJ Alex D, and Chill Bar resident DJ Chubb Jim will all be there. So come join us. We'll be in the chat. We'll be watching. Let's all party there on Sunday together virtually at 2 p.m. on Instagram Live. And that's on Channel Q, right? Channel Q's Instagram, @ We Are Channel Q. So look out for that and follow us if you're not following us already.
Let's
get into some what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. Joe Biden's campaign and the Democratic National Committee, they formally agreed to a joint fundraising agreement to raise larger amounts from individuals with the committee as he moves into the general election. So the agreement basically allows donors to now contribute a maximum of 360,000 $600, very specific, to the Biden Victory Fund. And that's a dramatic increase that many Democrats hope will boost the campaign's fundraising because it is behind that of President Donald Trump's and the Republican Party's. Now, let's move on to New York. A Long Island man is being charged with violating the Defense Production Act after prosecutors say he hoarded several tons of personal protective equipment needed by first responders and healthcare workers.
Are you kidding me? So he was just holding on to it?
Yeah, let's talk about how much he's holding on to. 1.6 tons of face masks, 1.8 tons of hand sanitizer, and shipments of surgical gowns weighing more than 2.2 tons.
I wonder, was he reselling it? Because my thing is, this could turn out to be, like, obviously he's being charged, but if they find out that he was actually selling it, he could probably get extra charges on there because that is totally illegal in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, yeah, he was actually selling it at his store for huge markups.
Oh my God, wow. I hope he enjoys prison. I hope
and
he
also
enjoys
the afterlife
it.
Might, I don't know. The afterlife might not be good for him either.
Well, that just, I mean, that's
bad what, juju.
You know, the karma's not good at all.
Yeah, definitely. Let's move on to Trump's press conference, his daily press conference that we give you a recap of every single day at the top of the show. So he began his COVID-19 briefing today with optimism about the economy and said this.
We're opening our country. It's very exciting to see. We have a lot of talent involved, from governors down to people that just stand there and help you with the doors. There's been tremendous talent involved and tremendous spirit from our country. The country is a great place, and it's going to be greater than ever before. I really believe that. I think there's going to be a tremendous upward shift. I spoke with Tim Cook today of Apple, and they have a good sense of the market, and he feels it's going to be a V. The V is sharply upward later on as we actually get it fully open.
Okay, the activity continues at the White House. So we continue to bring you all that news right here.
Which we're not even done talking about it because
we
of
aren't.
Everything trending today.
Exactly. Speaking of President Trump, he has come under fire for comments about injecting disinfectants to battle the coronavirus. He did that yesterday. So what's trending when we return after this? Okay, this story is about to get cray cray. We're getting into this because you've seen it everywhere. President Donald Trump suggested the possibility of an injection of disinfectant into a person infected with the coronavirus.
I honestly thought we were past this point of stupidity. I thought, you know, we have medical experts, we have people really working hard, and then we go back. We take 2 steps forward and take 64 back.
I mean, yeah. So he mentioned this during his daily briefing yesterday. He is now claiming that it was, of course, a moment of sarcasm. He's just kidding. But here it is.
Injections of disinfectant. They're quite
provocative. No, I was asking a question sarcastically to reporters like you just to see what would happen. Now, disinfectant for doing this, maybe on the hands would work.
The disinfectant, where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number in the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see. But the whole concept of the light, the way it kills it in 1 minute, that's pretty powerful.
Okay, I have no words. I mean, I know we've been telling people to disinfect their hands, but do we really need to take it this far? And this is so irresponsible to even say it this way.
And this is not the first time this has been brought up. We've actually talked about how people were listening to some things that he was saying to, like, take little things here. And, like, I know there was a drug for malaria. We'll have our expert on to kind of talk about this. But I know there was a lot of these things where people were trying things that he would suggest, and they were seriously hurting themselves. And that is a problem when your president is sitting right there on national television or platforms or tweeting, whatever he's doing, and saying these things and thinking sarcasm, you know, this is a time for sarcasm. It just makes no sense for me.
And I was wondering why Tide Pods was trending on Twitter today. I was like, for real? Tide Pods are back in 2020? Haven't we seen enough this year? Okay. Editor of the Washington Post, The Fix, Natalie Jennings, joins us right now to dig into this story. Natalie, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So what
Natalie,
do you think about
y'all
this?
Natalie, I've been busy.
Yeah. When you heard the statement, what was your immediate reaction?
My eyes got a little bit big at the screen. And of course, so we're going on, this happened yesterday at the briefing. Right. President Trump had his, an expert, a scientist at the Department of Homeland Security came out, talked about some new things. There is a scientific basis for this, right? Not the way he took it, but
yeah,
we came out, we hear about these new studies that are happening. One of them is about how heat and light kill this virus. Another is about how aerosols and bleach kill the virus quickly, and how they're exploring how that might just apply going forward. And then President Trump got out there and he said these things that are now trending everywhere about, you know, maybe how we could apply these things internally. he did not appear to be joking at the time he said it, and he did not express that he was joking when the reporters followed up with him after, wondering, you know, why are you saying these things that might be rumor? Today, his line is that he was joking, and his team is saying that the media misconstrued things. But people are, like you said, taking this seriously. You know, the company Lysol issued a statement saying, please don't inject or ingest this. God. The Maryland Department of Health said they got a spike in calls about this. Now, we don't know that anybody went out and did it. And obviously, it seems like common sense not to do this. The tone was sort of like spitballing ideas. But, you know, got a pretty big platform up there that he's saying this from.
Well, mm-hmm. Let's talk about the political ramifications of this, because it does seem like the messaging this entire COVID-19, you know, pandemic has been happening has been all over the place. One minute they're telling us that we don't have to wear masks. They're saying now it's required to. And it just feels like, especially him leading this charge, it doesn't really seem like he even has a full understanding of what's going on. Where's really the disconnect, especially because his fan base, how I like to call them, are his supporters, are trying these things. And it just feels like that's just a terrible move in the midst of an election season as well.
Yeah, well, we know one couple in Arizona did try. He never advised that you should go out and do this, right? But he did mention an ingredient, hydroxychloroquine. A couple in Arizona found a different substance that had that in it, tried it, and right. One of the men died. You know, we can't say that President Trump told them to do that, but it is a bad example of a mixed message. And what happens is a lot of these things, scientists that Trump employs, that he can go out and he can ask them, you know, they work for him. He can ask them anything, anytime, and they have to answer it. But he's sort of testing these theories out in these public platforms. We understand that he's not really attending his briefings with the scientists, and he has been very zealous, I think. And here's what really is happening. He's very anxious to find a cure all, something that will make this go away and that it's not happening on his watch. And we're seeing that play out in real time, even if science does not have a cure all.
And do you think he's sort of anxious? And do you think he's anxious because of him trying to help the American people? Or is it because if he doesn't, that could really reflect negatively during this election season?
It's impossible to separate that, I think.
Of course,
if there's a deadly thing happening, a lot of people have lost family members, people's jobs are destroyed. That is, of course, going to affect his reelection. But it's also, you know, a terrible thing that anybody who wants to leave the country does not want to see happen on his watch.
But we appreciate you for joining us for this story, and I'm sure you will be back.
I would love to. All right. It's a good way to spend my 5 o'clock DC time.
Exactly.
For sure. And I know Trump is keeping y'all busy over there at the Washington Post. And we seriously appreciate you all for supporting the show so much and coming on and giving us the rundown of everything going on.
Oh, this is fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Natalie Jennings is again the editor of the Washington Post, The Fix. Check it out online right now. But we're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
Okay, so fashion royalty are at odds with ex-Vogue editor Andre Leontali ripping into Anna Wintour and why she left him with emotional and psychological scars. I guess the devil does really wear Prada. That's up next. All right, we are back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And before we get started with all this news about Anna Wintour, let's do a huge shout out to the end of Will and Grace, Shira. Oh my gosh, an end of an era.
Yeah, you know, it had to happen. It had its second time around. And, you know, it was fun, but I don't know. I've never gone into it But I'm happy that for the fans out there, they got to experience it again and a new generation got to discover it.
It most definitely was a moment. I mean, after more than 50 episodes in the revival run and then a whole total of 246 episodes overall, I mean, Will and Grace is finally saying goodbye to its fans once again. And this show, it was so groundbreaking for its time. It premiered way back in 1998. I was a little one around that time, but I ended up growing up on it, like catching reruns. And I just remember seeing this show, like even being young and kind of understanding the humor. I understand it now more than ever.
Totally.
But it was just so impactful just for the community as all together. And I feel like it deserves this and so much more. And maybe, you know, maybe we'll see it come back at another time. But there was so much
another
drama.
Decade. Every decade they'll come back, or when they need money, they'll be like, let's bring back that show.
But there was so much drama, though. There was so much drama kind of coming out towards the end. So I don't know. It might be a while. And who knows? Maybe it will be another crazy election season that will bring them back together. But let's dive into some fashion news, because Anna Wintour is being dragged, y'all, by her former editor-at-large of Vogue, Andre Leon Talley. He's revealing that his friendship with Anna was just completely terrible, and how she basically left him with emotional and psychological scars from their decades-long friendship. And so if you're not familiar with Andre Leon Talley, here's a little back information. He is this big, black, large and in charge queer man, and he's really notable for being on the carpets, really Anna's right hand. He wore these fabulous capes, honey, and what it's actually one of my heroes, someone that I loved and always have admired, because he became one of the first black men to have the highest ranking in fashion journalism.
Oh, wow.
But to be honest, him and Anna were amazing together. But in this new book, in his new upcoming memoir that's launching in September, The Chiffon Trenches, he is now writing about how basically he was frozen out by Wintour last year because he was too old, he was too overweight, and he was too uncool for her.
Oh my God. You know, The Devil Wears Prada. Oh my God, I just pronounced that totally wrong. The Devil Wears Prada. Mm-hmm. I know it's not an ah, it's an aw.
Yeah.
It was based on her. I mean, she's known to be like a bit evil. I feel like though she's gotten a bit more tame in her older age, but this doesn't surprise me.
No, but here's the thing. So he even touches on how that movie was a little bit of an exaggeration, but he talks about how she just surrounds herself with only, you know, the most powerful people in their industries. And like he basically that he feels like he is a dinosaur now. He even claimed there was a moment in the blurb that was exclusively only given to Daily Mail. He claimed that Anna set up an intervention with his pastor and popular designer, Oscar De La Renta, to basically help him lose weight.
Yikes.
She would like make fun of him and like, you know, say like terrible things about his weight, made him go on a diet that required him to only eat cabbage. Like it was a very, what he's revealing is a very tumultuous relationship.
It's abusive.
He was terrified of her. He said that he was intimidated and terrified of her. He even goes on to talk about how he was replaced by YouTuber Liza Koshy as a Met Gala red carpet correspondent and kind of shades her. It was actually
Wait. He shades Liza?
Yes, he shades Liza. It was hilarious. We gotta wrap up here. But I do think this memoir, I'm most definitely going to be grabbing it. It's called The Chiffon Trenches. It's coming out in September. And you should check out his documentary where he really talks about a lot of his time in fashion and working with Anna, and how basically he really doesn't have that much money anymore. Like it sucks that he gave all of his life to fashion. He was, you know, Andy Warhol's assistant for a while.
Wow.
And like he doesn't have anything really left. So it's really sad.
Can we get him on the show?
I would love to.
I would love to talk to him.
So I've been trying to figure out ways of reaching out. I'm figuring it out. I'm getting closer and closer. So if you want that to happen, hit us up at LGT Show everywhere on the social medias. And of course, find more of this story at WeAreChannelQ.com.
Okay, next up, don't believe everything you read about COVID-19. Coming up, find out how almost half of the tweets you see about the pandemic are actually bots. That's next. So this just came out. Nearly half the people talking about the coronavirus pandemic on Twitter are not actually people, Ryan.
I mean, I'm not shocked at all, actually, because every time you look on Twitter, if you are Twitter savvy, you would see that they only are following like two people and they only have that one tweet or a couple other tweets that make no sense. And they normally look like their default photo looks like a stock photo that they just found in the depths of Google searches.
Yeah, these are bots. We are being hounded by bots on Twitter. That's according to new research from Carnegie Mellon University. And many of these bots are basically feeding Twitter with harmful false storylines about the pandemic. Joining us to help us figure out who to trust in all of this is Kathleen Carley, a professor in the School of Computer Science at Carnegie Mellon University. Kathleen, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Okay, this doesn't surprise me, but like, this is pretty wild. It seems to be a recurring issue, whether it be with the election or these big things that are happening that are really influencing culture. But first off, can you explain for the noobs out there, as I like to say, what is a bot and who controls them or creates them?
Absolutely. A bot is just simply a computer program that can run autonomously, can run by itself and do things. And as to who creates them, you can actually buy tools and put up your own bot. Advertising agencies put these up a lot. Adversarial actors put them up and so on. People put them up just for jokes.
Okay. Well, this is not a joking time, obviously. So why would they decide to create all these bots right now? And what types of information are they sharing?
So one of the reasons for creating them right now is to actually try to influence communities to behave in certain ways, to spread discord and disbelief, to undermine our institutions and reduce trust. So some of the kind of stories that they're spreading are lots of different disinformation about fake cures and fake preventions, such as drink bleach to cure yourself of coronavirus, or drink Corona beer, you will get coronavirus. So undermining the company. There's also ones about the whole COVID-19 is a hoax, so, and lying about what is going on in hospitals. There's other ones telling you that people are shooting people who have coronavirus, you know, if they've tested positive. So they're all over the place.
It just seems like these bots, they're playing into these emotions, right? And that's what they're there for. Why isn't, you know, Twitter or these platforms removing them? It seems like they're always popping up. And how come we haven't caught up to this at this point?
Well, I think Twitter is actually removing a large number of the accounts. So many of the bots that we saw even a few weeks ago are gone, but new ones keep popping up. The other thing is that from a freedom of speech perspective, you know, bots are also used to spread good information. They're also being used to spread real news and to spread, you know, health tips and so on. So you can't just willy-nilly remove all bots. And
okay.
Spotting information is hard.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And like, do we have a sense of where these bots started, like a location? Because I know for the election, Russia was, you know, we were blaming Russia. So where are these ones coming from?
As far as we can tell, they're coming from all over the place. It's actually really hard to figure out exactly where they're from. But some of them look exactly like the Russian bots in the previous election. Some of them look like, you know, they're supporting things that are more in China's interest. Some of them look like they're just Joe Hacker building them up, you know. So they seem to be coming from all over the place. Some are coming out of propaganda firms also.
So that's my thing, though. If we know, like, there's good bots versus bad bots, why is there not a verification process for these bots? It seems like, oh, this is the news that they're going to be giving out. We can verify that this news is true and factual versus, oh, these other bots are just out here putting out lies everywhere.
Well, there's several reasons. One is that the way you send out your messages, like on Twitter, you can actually sign something that repeats your message for you. That's a bot. And if you sign that, some of the companies reserve the right to tweet from your account. So they'll just imitate, pretend they're you. Okay, that's hard to get rid of. The other reason is simply that you can't always know what is factual information, right? So some of the stuff sounds like it's factual, but it's really not. And finding that it's not is very hard. And a lot of what's being spread are negative opinions more than they are completely shown to be untrue statements.
Okay, yeah, confusing people, it seems, and creating a bit of chaos. We understand that you have created a tool to hunt bots. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So this is actually created in my center by some of my students. And it basically, what it does is you can give it old data, you know, a set of tweets, and it goes through and it applies machine learning algorithms. So it's called smart artificial intelligence to actually identify and mark the likelihood that a particular actor is a bot.
Okay. Well, that at least is helpful. Where can people find it? Yeah. Can people use it right now?
So we're setting it up for that anyone can use it. If you have a set of like JSON files, that's what you need to put into it. And we're setting it up as a service that anyone will be able to put stuff in.
Okay, well,
wow,
I'm sure
that's such good information.
That is
know.
Really great. It's nice to know that people are doing productive things in class right now. All right. Thanks again, Kathleen Carley. Kathleen is a professor in the School of Computer Science at Carnegie Mellon University, and I'm sure you'll be launching that from there. So thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
Now, coming up, protections for LGBTQ plus patients could soon disappear. Find out what Trump's team wants to change next. All right, we are back bringing you Let's Go There from our homes during this quarantine. The show must go on.
Yes,
and
yes.
And before the break, we were talking about all these Twitter bots popping up, and now half the information that we're consuming could be from bots, which is wild.
I mean, yeah, I still just don't understand how there is no system verifying it. Even though she was like, well, you really can't, you know, fact check facts. I'm just like, what do you mean you can't? It makes no sense to me. I don't know. Either way, you just can't trust anything on the internet, apparently, unless it's by an actual, like, viable news source or us here on Let's Go There.
Or, yes, I don't know. What you tweet, I'm sometimes questionable.
First of all, what I always tweet is on brand and on point, and it works. I give out good news.
It's not unbiased. That's for sure.
No, of course not. The only thing I'm bipartisan on is Beyonce. I sometimes hate her and I sometimes love her.
Okay. A love-hate relationship. Very healthy. Now, coming up, we're also going to be talking about masks, but not an angle that you've probably been hearing, but how masks are impacting race relations.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's impacting a lot of people of color and the way they navigate, you know, certain spaces right now in the midst of COVID-19. It's not just the virus attacking us. It's a lot of different situations now because wearing masks and being a person of color can be very difficult.
History of it, of course. Yeah, definitely. Very triggering for some people, but we're here to have that conversation in a safe space, as always. Now let's get into some what's trending in the news top of the hour. The Trump administration is moving to scrap an Obama-era policy that protected LGBTQ patients from discrimination. And this makes them even more vulnerable right now during the pandemic. The health department is close to finalizing its rewrite of a provision which prevented healthcare discrimination based on sex and gender identity. And the White House has indicated that the rule was under review right now. So advocates fear that it would allow hospitals and health workers to more easily discriminate against patients based on their gender or sexual orientation. And that's the last thing we need right now. Now, automakers Volkswagen, Toyota, Hyundai, and Fiat Chrysler are preparing to restart production as early as May at factories in the U.S. that have been shut down due to the pandemic. And the United Auto Workers say it's actually premature, given concerns about the possible spread of the virus. They said at this point in time, the UAW does not believe the scientific data is conclusive that it is safe to have our members back in the workplace. They released that statement yesterday and added this, we have not done enough testing to really understand the threat our members face. So of course, this is happening a lot as we keep having this conflict between what we want to open up to keep the economy going right now and how we want to maintain people's safety. And now let's move on to the Senate. Senator Chuck Schumer, Elizabeth Warren, and other Democrats are calling on government watchdogs to investigate the $670 billion small business rescue program that Congress added funding to this week. Mm-hmm. That comes, around the concerns that large companies got too much of the money. We all know that they also announced that they would be more transparent about it and revealing how much each company got, but I think they're holding them accountable to the original decisions that were made.
Well, you know, this is all a part of Elizabeth Warren's platform, right? She is always coming for these big businesses to make sure things are done properly and actually has the American people at the top of her mind, which is sucks that she will not be our Democratic candidate, but it's okay, our Democratic nominee. But I do think this is going to be interesting if they go into this investigation and figure out why certain people got, you know, what and how much money people got. Yeah. And if that does kind of come out, we're going to start seeing maybe even more protests. I think it's going to, I don't know, more information people have, the more they can decide whether, you know, they are upset with it or not. And with these companies like Shake Shack getting $10 million, we're like, what? Why are they getting that much money? They're not a small business. So who knows? I don't know.
Yeah. A lot of small independent businesses were left out. That initial $350 billion of funding was maxed out by April 16th pretty quickly. And now President Donald Trump actually today signed a law to inject $320 billion back for the efforts. So we'll see what happens with that money now.
Where is that money coming from? That is so much money just to be like, okay, all right, we're going to figure out another set of billions of dollars to send out to people. Hundreds of billions.
As one of our guests said, it's kind of like Monopoly money, I guess, right now. Yeah. I have no idea. Yeah. Now, coming up, could the pandemic cause an exodus from big cities? Well, some people are saying that's the case, and we're getting into it next. With the current pandemic affecting big cities like New York the hardest, many people are wondering if it will cause a mass exodus. Joining us to break down the future of people living or fleeing big cities is Cameron Sinclair, CEO of World Changing Ventures and founder of Frontline Care. Cameron, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be on.
Yeah, Cameron's doing great work right now, but let's talk about this this topic. Were big cities already seeing a trend of people leaving them before this, and why?
A couple of reasons. So first off, yes, you've got big major metropolis, New York, LA, San Francisco, and certainly with what's happening now, San Francisco is going to have a big push out of it because they were at a breaking point for housing. But secondary and tertiary cities are really going to get a positive boom, not just from the fact that some of these larger cities are unsustainable, both economically and socially. But, you know, with climate adaptation and climate change happening, some of these cities like Albany or Des Moines are going to become a much more of an interesting place to live because they're going to have kind of a more regulated climate system.
What does that mean? Can I ask, like, what does a climate system mean?
So a lot of people have been thinking about climate collapse, like, you know, rising seawaters and things like that. But what you're going to have is there's going to be a rapid increase in the number of storms. So you're going to see 5 to 6 Category 5 storms coming up the Gulf Coast. You're going to see bigger kind of climate effects on cities. So, you know, coastal cities are going to have more flooding. There's going to be more other natural disasters, wildfires hitting LA. At some point, folks living in these highly concentrated places are going to say, I'm done. I'm out. Right. So they're going to say, I'm going to go somewhere that's a lot safer, and places that we wouldn't think of as a great city to live in. Let's take Buffalo, New York, which used to have really hard snowstorms. Now they're not getting the snowfall they used to, and their weather is becoming quite, you know, warm. And so they're actually a good city to go to right on the border of Canada.
All right.
Okay, so after a pandemic in a place like New York or any major metropolitan, are people going to be doing like a mass exodus of the city? Are we about to start seeing people just pack up and just leave to figure something else out with their lives?
I think with any natural disaster, you have that. If you look at Katrina, 50% of people left New Orleans, and the 25% who came back were not from the community before. So what happens is when you're affected by something like COVID-19 or a major natural disaster, you have to say, well, what is the next 10 years going to look like for me? And if it's not going to look better, it's time to go. And so I think what we're going to find out, places like New York, I mean, right here where I am, you know, we've hit 10,000 fatalities because of COVID-19. There's going to be a lot of people thinking, do I want to have my kids, you know, in a school with 1,500 other kids?
Well, let's be honest. If you're living in New York or any major metropolitan and you're living comfortably, you're already living in a sense of privilege. A lot of times people won't even be able to, especially now after millions of people are without a job seeking employment, it's going to be really difficult for them to kind of just pack up and leave and move to the next city because they're going to have to deal with, where's the money to travel? You know, I have to get gas. I have to do this. I have to, you know, there's multiple parts that are playing into this.
Well, you got to think that you got to cut your losses. You know, a 2-bedroom apartment in Manhattan is $4,000 to $5,000 a month, right? Yeah. If you say, okay, you know what? I'm going to see you try and come after me when I break my lease and go, right? And you just jump ship and move town. you're actually saving money by moving. So I think a lot of people are making this kind of decision that, yes, we're in a tough time. We're going to hit probably, I would say, we'll be at 12% unemployment by the end of the year. And so people are going to look at the cities where they're booming and where there's some move. And so, you know, and when you look at privilege as well, folks who are wealthy in some of these cities, real estate prices are going to course correct so rapidly that some of these people that invested in massive real estate projects are going to lose millions of dollars. So they're going to start cutting and running as well.
So interesting. And do you think that as these cities open back up, there'll be more jobs back? Are we going to then see, as people are moving out of the big cities, more virtual employment happening?
Well, I think you're also going to see a strange return to the industrialized city. Mm. And what I mean by that is on 36th Street, one of the most busiest streets in the city of Manhattan, the Whole Foods shut down and has become a distribution center. And it's now being used to actually do at-home delivery, right? So I think people are going to begin to say, how can I readapt this building? We may also see a return to much more nationalized jobs. We're going to kind of fear the idea of food and other resources coming in from outside the country. So you may begin to find much more hyper-localized solutions, whether it be in kind of the clothing industry, whether it be in the design industry, whether it be in the food industry. Here in New York, I know a few people that want to buy buildings to turn them into vertical gardens so they could provide food to city dwellers. So this is all shifting. And the other thing we haven't spoken about is the near implosion of WeWork. When WeWork implodes, there's going to be a lot of buildings available to take over and transform.
Wow. They're in that many places in New York? That's crazy.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about also, and to really wrap this up, how is this not going to cause kind of a domino effect? Because if people uproot their lives, move from these big cities, and they're going to these smaller towns, you see that. I'm from Nashville. People weren't thinking about Nashville about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, but now rent has skyrocketed because everyone is moving there. So we're going to start seeing this, you know, the same thing happening where people won't be able to afford where they're at, even though they try to move as a financial relief.
Well, Ryan, for someone like yourself, you're going to hear this word, which is a very dangerous word. It's called gentrification. And places like Nashville and others are going to get an influx of people from big cities like New York and LA. And they're going to come in with, you know, you sell an apartment in New York and you make some money. What you can buy in Nashville is a lot more. And so you're going to have this effect on these cities that are unintended. So even the growth that's going to happen in cities is not going to be equitable, and it's not going to be fair. And so you have to be very careful that you don't gentrify the very neighborhoods that have been historic neighborhoods for decades.
And that's going to require us trusting the leadership of those neighborhoods to set that as a precedent. So we'll see about that in this new era. Cameron Sinclair, you are fabulous. Really interesting stuff. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Again, Cameron Sinclair is the CEO of World Changing Ventures and founder of Frontline Care. Now coming up in a time where face masks are needed to protect everyone, why are they causing a divide? Find out when we return with Let's Go There. Face masks are raising questions around health safety and now a conversation around prejudice. And actually, we talked about this before as well, Ryan.
Yeah, we briefly touched on it and how it is really scary, especially for a lot of people of color, and at a time like this when wearing masks and going into public spaces and possibly being racially profiled. And even the idea of not having a mask on, what has happened to Black people and one Black man in Philadelphia getting yanked off of a bus. Conversation and this topic around mask and what we're seeing in the midst of COVID-19 is really something interesting, and I think it needs to be talked about I think people don't want to really, it's always difficult and uncomfortable to talk about race, but it's important that we acknowledge people's experiences, specifically even mine, where I even feel where I don't have like your regular mask that everyone's wearing. I've been wearing like a bandana coverage.
Okay.
And it's like, I only have like two colors and they're like blue and red. And even my mom, she told me like, well, be careful wearing those, like, you know, specifically in different areas. And even when I go to places, it feels like, you know, people are looking at me strange. And I feel that as a queer black man in society right now, I feel how this could really be taken into a different way for a lot of people of color.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very triggering. So thank you for sharing that and your experience. Well, NBC News Think contributor Christopher Mosley joins us to break down why face masks are causing a divide right now. Christopher, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, while writing this article, did you find that people are accepting that wearing a mask has become a societal norm, or there are still these stigmas?
I think it has become more normalized, obviously, as we're seeing these kind of overnight ordinances kind of pop up, even requiring people to wear them. I think even just in the past 24 hours, Michigan is going to require you to wear them. But unfortunately, that, you know, for I think certain people in society are treated differently no matter what. And unfortunately, I think something like pandemics kind of raise these tensions. And so you've seen incidents where, for instance, I think, you know, people of color are treated a little bit differently according to wearing a mask or not. You've seen people be villainized both for wearing one and for not wearing one. And so when you realize that, you know, it's basically a no-win situation for some people, I think, you know, you could kind of conclude that people are targeted based on something that has nothing to do with a mask, really.
Yeah.
Now, when you wrote this piece for NBC News, because you are a Think contributor, did you experience something? Were you witnessing something that you were seeing every day that you were going out in the midst of this moment where you were starting to notice little things for a lot of people of color?
I was mostly going by, I had a couple friends, you know, this is anecdotal, but I had a couple friends who were kind of early adopters, and their experiences of people either looking at them funny or themselves feeling kind of hyper self-conscious. I'm thinking of one friend of mine in particular who kind of, I mean, does have like a kind of a criminal past, and his funny response to the whole situation was, you know, I don't feel normal wearing a mask into 7-Eleven and that being, you know, a comfortable experience.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. And I'm sure something like that, hearing that, you're like, oh, there's something here to discuss and bring into the mainstream in a way, because these are conversations happening in communities and between people.
Right. I think what really sparked this as a topic for me was, ahead of the pandemic, a lot of states were trying to pass legislation to criminalize wearing a mask because of the kind of widespread protests where protesters, you know, were wearing masks. And so they were trying to, you know, really make it a problem. And then suddenly when the pandemic hit, they were doing the exact opposite. So I'm kind of wondering how this is going to play out between now and the election. That was really the kind of nucleus of this.
Yeah, what's so interesting is, and while I was reading your article, I was even thinking about a show on HBO, The Watchmen, and how it really brought up this vigilante, you know, the police officers in that show were wearing masks. It was a part of that storytelling, right? And it feels so strange that we're kind of living in this weird space that really mirrors that. I would love to know kind of this idea of wearing masks. Do you think it gives people kind of this false of fear or a sense of empowerment? Because we have seen our own vigilante situation with protesters out of different states really fighting the stay-at-home order. And we're actually going to discuss that. And I want you to hold on to your answer. We're going to discuss that when we come right back. So don't y'all go anywhere. We have more Let's Go There coming up next. All right, we are back and we are continuing this conversation about face mask and how it's really contributing to race relations in the midst of COVID-19. And joining us for this conversation is NBC News Think contributor Christopher Mosley, or just Chris, that's how we've been calling him.
Yeah.
Joins us to understand the controversy surrounding face mask and why it doesn't feel safe for a lot of people of color. And before this, you know, before we left out of this break, I was asking you, Chris, about this false of a sense of fear, or is it a false sense of fear or a sense of empowerment for some, particularly when it comes to non-people of color and, or versus people of color, because we are seeing a lot of vigilantes, you know, protesting these stay-at-home orders, and they're, you know, they're okay with wearing the mask. They're not seen, you know, making this huge hoopla of noise. What is your take on that?
Well, I think we've seen it, you know, kind of come out recently as also a defiant kind of anti-government sentiment where people are going out not wearing their masks. You know, there's those types of protests. And as I was mentioning before, I think before the pandemic, you had groups of protesters who were wearing the masks, who were kind of trying to avoid being identified by police. And that's kind of interesting too, because the way that those protesters have been treated differently, there was a group of white nationalists who were protesting in DC in February, and they were allowed to wear masks, even though DC has apparently a law in the books saying you can't wear them. And so people are kind of, you know, sometimes policed differently, I feel, according to political ideology, unfortunately.
Someone on Twitter said this interesting thing and brought up, I guess, what you were speaking of when it came to in relation to Colin Kaepernick, who was peacefully protesting and, you know, taking a knee versus what we're seeing as, you know, very aggressive protesting on the other side of non-people of color. And they're being looked at as kind of like what our president has described them as. Oh, they're just out here just trying to
patriotic. Yes. Yeah.
And it feels like, okay.
Yeah, I think historically, protesters of color are seen as, you know, people who should just follow the rules. That's what you hear across the board, no matter what type of protest it is. And then when you do, I mean, have white protesters, they're kind of lionized. They're kind of treated as heroes. And suddenly the, you know, follow the rules thing just it disappears. I don't know. It is strange.
I like that term. I like that you said lionize. I've never heard that.
That's really interesting.
I really like that
also,
term.
I also think it's because perhaps Trump knows that those are the people that would vote for him. So he's trying to figure out how to play it.
Yeah, and that's something that's really kind of dangerous as we are in an election year, is how much of this is completely played up for political reasons, even though it can be a life or death situation for a lot of people. So you're getting a lot of confusing messages at once. And, you know, I think the law tends to kind of follow their own path no matter what. You know, we had a lot of problems with race and policing before this happened. And now you're kind of seeing it, you know, show itself in kind of revealing ways that we've never experienced before, or at least we haven't experienced in a long time since the last pandemic in 1918.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, Chris, in doing the story, finally, what is your takeaway, or what is the thing that you learned about the story that you want to share with everyone?
I think my takeaway is just that in the end, masks or not, you know, America just kind of is going to be itself. I think there's really no hiding that.
Yeah, I do think it does pull off this blanket of what it's in, really showing the history that America has always been rooted in my opinion, you know, and it's not even an opinion. Yeah. It's a fact. This is what this country was built off of.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And do we finally take this time and this slowdown and this shift to take that in and say we're ready to make a change, or to acknowledge what's happened? Do you think this is going to be the time that it happens?
If we haven't gotten rid of racism yet, I don't know what's going to take it. It's in the system, right? Don't you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of baked in, unfortunately. I would like to think, I mean, the optimistic part of me hopes that after this is all over, that we are maybe a little nicer to each other, but you know, that remains to be seen.
All right, well, Chris Mosley, ending it on a high note.
Thank you very much.
You can check out his story.
It's just at NBCnews.com.
Okay,
rank.
Yeah. So, of course, his official title is an NBC News Think contributor. Chris Mosley, thanks again. I hope to have you back soon.
All right. Thanks, both of you, so much.
Now, coming up, find out why Hawaii is spending extra money for people to leave the state. That's when we return. What's trending in the news, top of the hour. Okay, we are back bringing you the show from quarantine and enjoying this lovely Friday here in Los Angeles. It is beautiful out. I just see through the windows the sun and it looks nice.
I'm happy you're looking directly at the sun, like our president.
I'm just looking outside. Okay. I'm looking outside at the trees blowing in the wind. Nature is living its best life right now.
Well, I'm happy you're having a moment with nature, but I wanted to bring up the amazing conversation that we just had with NBC News contributor. It was really nice. I liked it. It was good to really have these discussions. And, you know, we always push in the hot topics button, honey. We always bring in that uncomfortable conversation to people. So they feel a little bit better about having them.
Yes. A safe place to be uncomfortable. Let's go there.
you're just like the queen of taglines, aren't you? Like,
we give good show. Have you been listening to the show? I've been coming up with taglines all week. No, my creativity is just like on fire while I hang out here in my bedroom doing this show. Okay, let's get into some what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. Hawaii's state agency that is dedicated to welcoming visitors to the state is temporarily helping those people leave. They want you to get out. They have set aside $25,000 for the cost of sending tourists away if they refuse to abide by the state's 14-day quarantine, which makes sense. Just like if you want to go to a dream place right now, then you got to follow the rules. They said in a press release that outbound travel arrangements are being handled by the Visitor Aloha Society, a nonprofit group that normally helps tourists in Hawaii deal with problems during their visit, such as theft or medical emergency.
How about I just go buy a quick trip there just so they can pay me to leave and I can leave like the next day and make some money. It's like going to the casino. You bet some money and then you get some more back. If you're lucky.
I'm pretty sure they mean they're just paying for your travel arrangements. I don't think they're paying you necessarily.
You never know what could happen.
But go for it. Or just pretend you left and then just keep the money and stay there.
No, I ain't going nowhere near.
By the way, we did get a listener once that said, when we joked about going to Hawaii, it said it was irresponsible for us to bring it up.
I know.
We're joking around right now. We are just giving you the news from the Hawaii Tourism Authority. But it's just do everything responsibly. Honestly.
Actually, I had a friend who recently traveled and he had a whole hazmat suit on and a thing because he had to travel home for like an emergency. And he like documented him traveling. And I was like, oh, my God. One, he was disinfecting all like crazy. And he was also the only one on the flight. So it was kind of like he did all that for no reason. But I understand.
Yeah, I want to get myself a hazmat suit.
No.
I think it's time to prep.
Well, don't leave and you won't need it.
Well, one day I might have to. It's might as well be ready. Let's move on to this clip of Andy Cohen that is going viral. Now, earlier this month, the FDA announced that it was amending a rule that would allow gay and bisexual men to donate blood. That rule was originally 12 months. They brought it down to 3 months after they had sex, right? So they could donate blood 3 months after they've had sex. And that's an effort to meet blood demands during the coronavirus pandemic. However, activists have pointed out that the change does not go far enough. And Andy Cohen, who, as we know, is gay, he launched a really scathing attack on the FDA's new rules on his show.
Now it's time for our moment of mazel, and tonight I've got a bit of a rant, so please indulge me. After recovering from coronavirus, I wanted to see if there was something that I could do to help people who were infected. I signed up for a program for COVID-19 survivors where you could donate plasma, which is rich in antibodies, to those still battling the virus. I was told that due to antiquated and discriminatory guidelines by the FDA, to prevent HIV, I am ineligible to donate blood because I'm a gay man. Even the new relaxed rules require gay men to abstain from sex for 3 months, whether they're in a monogamous relationship or not before giving blood, though no such blanket restrictions exist for people of other sexual orientations.
Woo, points were made, and I'm so happy he's speaking up about it, because what I thought before when I saw this like story briefly and I was just like glancing over it, I was like, oh, maybe they didn't want him to give, you know, blood because of like him and his, like he tested positive for COVID-19 and it was all these things. They were just taking extra steps. And then now, yeah, precautions. And then like, you know, that is something that we all go through if you are a part of this community, if you are a gay male, a part of this community. It's very sad. And honey, I'm afraid of needles anyway, so I wouldn't, you know, planning on giving blood no time soon.
No, if you can, then do it.
You
definitely
should.
If you can. But hopefully these things will change as more people are speaking up about it. And definitely Andy Cohen using his platform in a huge show like that brings more awareness to the issue.
Yep.
All right, but coming up, there's still so much that we haven't covered. Mm-hmm. We can't even cover what's trending in the news. So we brought Super Funny News Desk correspondent Ben Morrison back. Get ready for this one to give us some headlines we probably missed. This is going to be interesting.
Go.
Okay, it's Friday, which means it's time for another fun recap of the week, including stories we missed. And back with us is Super Funny's very own Ben Morrison. Hey, Ben.
Hi, team. How are you doing?
Wow, you're so legit. I'm happy we have some real news reporters around here to give us the news we missed.
I'm a newsman.
Okay, so you have some stories that you want to share with us today. Let's start with this one. A former Labradoodle breeder was tapped to lead the U.S. Pandemic Task Force. What's up with that?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you just want to feel that we had the right people in charge from the jump. And then sometimes you read articles like this. Going back to the very early days of coronavirus, on January 21st, Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar appointed the man who would run the COVID-19 task force. That man is Brian Harrison. And, you know, you'd probably think that right before leading the nation's coronavirus task force, he was probably cutting up genome sequences in some lab, leading a team of doctors to medical breakthroughs. Unfortunately, that was not the plan for the Trump administration, because prior to leading the nation's coronavirus task force, Brian Harrison ran a company called Dallas Labradoodles.
What does that even mean? So he was working with dogs?
Dallas Labradoodles. And, you know, I'd love to say that at one point he ran Dallas Labradoodles, but he ran this from 2012 to 2018.
So he's a dog breeder? Is that illegal?
He's a dog breeder.
Wow.
Labradoodle, of course, is the cross between a golden retriever and a poodle. It makes
Labrador.
Total sense that he'd be fighting coronavirus, you know, because it's a cross.
Oh, it's a Labrador?
It's a Labrador retriever who was bred with a poodle.
So I a Labradoodle.
It's a Labradoodle. I thought you said Google. You messed up the dogs for a second. Sorry.
Are you calling out our news anchor, Shira?
I know my dog.
I'm
breeds.
A newsman. I retract what I said. Officially. Looks like you're using an ad blocker.
We don't want to spread misinformation, Ben
That's
Morrison.
True. No fake news over here.
No fake news.
So I really want to know, though, because I'm trying to figure out a space to really get away from Shira. I know we're doing these Zoom calls, and I thought this was enough, but I would really love somewhere tropical, possibly, that didn't have any coronavirus, that I could go immediately after this is all over.
Well, you, sir, are in luck. If you've ever imagined a tropical beach, white sands, Mai Tais in a hammock, and no coronavirus, well, baby, do we have the place for you. St. Lucia. The picturesque Caribbean island is officially coronavirus-free after their 15th patient fully recovered. That is a 100% success rate, which leads this newsman to believe the cure for coronavirus is Corona commercial.
Wait, Ben, I think it's called St. Lucia, not St. Lucia.
I'm a newsman, Shira.
We are getting our sources.
I retract my pronunciation officially.
Let's not spread misinformation.
All right, fine. Fine, I can't afford tropical vacations like you, Shira. I'm not the heiress to the American Swanson Frozen Foods dynasty like you are. Okay? I'm a working man, a newsman. I brush my teeth, I go to work, Shira.
Okay, let's move on. We're getting distracted, you guys.
St. Lucia.
Yes. Sorry, we don't have time to edit it. So, Ben.
If you cut a minute of this, if you cut a second of this out, I will never appear on the show again. I prefer unedited news.
This is the best thing.
Can we go on?
Yes, all right. Let's go on.
Our next story that we missed this week. French researchers are using nicotine patches on coronavirus patients. Can you explain, Ben?
Well, smoke them if you got them, because a study at a major hospital in Paris is looking at why people who smoke seem to have a much, much lower rate of catching coronavirus. A substance in tobacco, seemingly nicotine, might block the virus from entering the cells, suggests the study. And I love that this was at a French hospital. I literally just imagine someone being like, you know.
She speaks French. That's literally how she sounds every time she speaks French.
Why are a lot of people not catching coronavirus?
Oh my God. I'm sorry for all the French people listening. That was a horrible accent.
Yeah, well, you know why they are listening, Shira? Because they're French and they smoke and they don't have coronavirus. The study suggests that nicotine might actually block the virus's ability to enter your cells, much like someone who smokes blocks their ability to have me be their significant other. Do you understand how that works?
Okay, so on your Tinder profile, you say you don't like smokers.
No, I'm not on Tinder. I'm on an all no smoking dating app called Fun Lungs.
Fun Lungs.
Ben,
it started in China.
Stop spreading misinformation on our show. It's really not cool. We'll give you maybe one more shot to be on the show next time.
I don't know
time,
where we found
but you
this
can't,
guy.
You can't keep on sharing things like apps that don't even exist.
Add me on Fun Lung. My profile is Deep Breath 69.
Okay, I think it's time for us to go with Ben. I appreciate you for joining us. You're always giving us some really great news. Tell everyone where they can keep up with your type of news.
Well, folks, if you like what I'm doing, you can catch the actual video version of the Super Funny News Desk, which is not quite as fun because I don't have our two wonderful hosts, but it's still quite good, at youtube.com/superfunny. Do one or two new episodes every week. The new one just went up, and I think you'll dig it. Please like and subscribe and keep listening to these guys, the rock stars of news you can use.
Oh, we appreciate that. All right, we'll let you back for another week.
Deep Breath 69 on the Fun Lung app.
Okay, cut him off, Brian. Cut him off.
It's time to go.
Coming up. All right, this is actually serious, you guys. Coming up, a 10-year-old gets a quarantine birthday surprise in the hospital that he will never forget. That's our Yaz Queen of the Day when we return. It's time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
Okay, I always think you're going to like choke on yourself when you do that sometimes, Ryan.
I'm anyway. A professional. Thank you.
And he has Beyonce, by the way, in his Zoom background. So he's stepping it up today.
What would Beyonce do? She would be better than this.
Well, all right. Before we get into this heartwarming clip of a 10-year-old quarantine birthday surprise in the hospital, let's get into this story and what celebrities are doing to bring masks to people for charity. As we all know, we're all wearing masks. We're all needing to do it to keep each other safe. And musicians are now providing some options. Today, Universal Music Group, artists including Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, Billie Eilish, The Weeknd, The Rolling Stones, and others released reusable cloth face masks as part of the company's We've Got You Covered initiative.
So how much are they? Because my thing is, if this is going to charity, I do feel like people are about to pay a pretty penny for these little masks.
Well, good question. I think this is pretty normal. The masks are priced at $15 each. All net proceeds benefit Music Cares, which is working to support the music community affected by the coronavirus pandemic. So it's a good cause. Grande's mask features a single teardrop reminiscent of her No Tears Left to Cry merch. Billie Eilish's mask includes her Blush logo in neon green. Blush? Is that how you pronounce it? No, I don't know. Fans of Willie Nelson can wear his face, while the Rolling Stones mask features its lips and tongue logo right over the kissing area. I love that. I want to get one of those.
I just don't like that they're $15, especially when you can get masks for $5. But that's fine.
Yeah, but
it's going towards a good cause.
Yeah, and they have to print on it, so it's a bit different. Okay, thank
you
for
your pricing. Yeah, but if you just want to do it, these celebrities have enough money just to go through it. I'm just saying, $15 feels a little pricey, but I guess it's worth it because it's going towards something good.
And now let's move on to this story of 10-year-old Reese Loggins, who is from North Carolina and has been battling leukemia at Duke University Hospital for 15 months. And coming up, this is going to be his second birthday spent with doctors and nurses instead of his friends.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So his parents thought, you know, they wanted to obviously celebrate this double digit milestone. 10 years old is like a big deal.
He's a preteen now.
Exactly. They wanted to give him a special present. Of course, there's all these social distancing guidelines and rules right now. So it didn't seem like he was going to be able to see anyone for his birthday. So this is what his mom said. The hospital room has to be extremely clean so it wouldn't work to wheel in a bicycle because he wanted a bicycle for his birthday. So they had to come up with a way for him to see it without bringing the bike inside.
I feel like this is about to be some production value.
Exactly. This is getting creative. His dad noticed a construction crew working on a hospital expansion project outside his son's room and explained the family situation. The construction team got to work. And on the morning of Reese's birthday last week, they used a crane to hoist the new bicycle up to the fifth floor window. Yeah, which is so sweet, how people come together during this time to bring people together to uplift them.
That couldn't have been approved by the government. You have to get those permits and stuff to use cranes for certain things.
Well, they were using it for construction outside, so it just worked out. And
it's cute. I love it. Imagine seeing you laying in your room. I'm in my hospital bed. I'm like, why is there a flying bicycle outside my window?
Am I going crazy? They also put a birthday banner made by his parents and called in to sing happy birthday along with medical staff. So they all came into his room saying happy birthday. This crane was there birthday banner and the bike. And it was just a very sweet moment captured on camera. Well, there you go. A great uplifting story to wrap up our week this week.
I know, right? It was just in time. Do you have your own Yes Queen of the Week? Because I do.
Yes, go.
Okay, my Yes Queen of the Week, you know how I do. It goes to the one and only Ross Matthews for joining the show.
Ryan always does this, which I like it because it's a reminder of the guests we had on and that you should listen to their interviews on our site, wearechannelq.com.
But my thing is, sure, you can't hate the player. Wait, what's it? Don't hate the game. Hate the game, don't hate the player.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah, that's it.
I think we don't even know what we're talking about. I'll give a shout out to, I loved what Lady Gaga did, obviously. And I also love what our guest Cameron Sinclair, who is on his whole organization that he started called Frontline Care. And it provides rest and recovery units for frontline workers. So I thought that was so cool. And I love highlighting innovative ideas like that and people coming together during this time to bring their expertise to those in need. So shout out to what they're doing, hashtag frontline care. So if you want to nominate someone or a corporation doing something special during this time for our Yas Queen of the Day, just hit us up on social media. At LGT Show, slide into our DMs, and we'll be back with more right after. Well, that does it for today's show. I can't believe it's Friday.
I know, and it's my mom's birthday, so shout out to my mother. I know I gave her a shout out at the top of the show, but this is a pretty big birthday for her. She is 50 years old and looks younger than ever. We've had moments where we've gone out to dinner, and y'all, I feel like I've been very candid about my relationship with my mom on here at times while still remaining private, but we've gone out to restaurants together and people have thought she was my sister, which is
cute.
But I'm about to do a long little Skype call with her. We're gonna check in and I'm gonna sing her happy birthday, and she has a little cake that she got herself, so it'll be nice.
What a nice, fun virtual birthday. I want to meet Mama Slay God one day.
Well, she was supposed to be here. I was going to take her to go see Hamilton because it was playing at the Pantages here in Los Angeles. And I wanted to take her, but, the corona messes up with everything. But
well, you're making it work. It's very sweet. And if you want something fun to do this weekend, you can join Channel Q and our friends in Palm Springs this Sunday at 2 p.m. for the Sunday Chill, an Instagram Live event and happy hour with our friends from Chill Bar. Of course, that's the Chill Bar in Palm Springs, but you can't be there in person, so we're going virtual.
Yes, I love that. Shout out to them.
Yeah. Chill Bar's resident drag queen, Sabrina Williams, hosts as the quarantine cocktail toastologist, love that, and our very own DJ Lisa Pittman, DJ Alex D, and Chill Bar resident DJ Chubb Jim will be there, and it will be happening 2 p.m. on Sunday on Chill Bar's Instagram Live. Just wanted to give them a shout out right
all
now.
All right. Well, I love that. And today was a really good show. This week was a really great week. Thank you so much, y'all, for sticking around with us. We really appreciate it. We know we've been all adjusting, and we are just very thankful for our listeners who are tuning in every single day with us, because you could be doing other things.
Yeah, and you're our fam, so we appreciate you, and we're here for each other. Of course, if you missed any of this week's shows, we post them as a podcast. Just go to radio.com, the app, search Let's Go There, and subscribe so you're notified when new episodes go live.
And share it.
Sharing is caring. Mm-hmm. Yes. Next week, we are back, same time, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q.
And we have a big week lined up next week. I mean, the guests coming in next week. Girl, y'all better get ready, because y'all just got the way. I'm not about to tease nothing. I'm just saying, this is it. I'm very excited.
Not me too. All right. Well, we are sending you love and light.
Honey, remember to slay.
Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Bye, y'all.
To this.